100 albums. One Vic Vaughn. It's Vic's Picks on the Nick DiGilio Show.
And there we go.
Still getting used to that great, great intro. The
official intro for Vic's Picks. All right. Yes. Vic is, has he's dove into the top 100 records, according to Rolling Stone, and been doing this now. How long have you been doing this now?
I was trying to figure that out the other day. Maybe a month.
It seems like about,
is it longer than that? Maybe a little
maybe
longer.
Maybe a little longer than a month, yeah.
Probably 6 weeks.
Yeah. And enjoying some of it, not enjoying some of it, but and learning along the way.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, which is great.
Some summary.
All right, so let's begin. Where do you want to start here?
Number 42, the Rolling Stones. Let's see, list of this is the Rolling Stones list of greatest albums ever recorded. The Doors, number 42,
the self-titled debut album.
Yep,
by the Doors.
Yeah, 1966. I think.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. It's either 66, 67. I'm sorry. I'm confused. I wrote down both those years. But track one started out with that because that one, just Break On Through, that's a jam. I think everybody can agree on that. That's a jam. It's. I mean, I kind of felt like it's perfect. It's a perfect first song for the Doors for me because that's kind of what I had heard or learned just throughout life about Morrison was just kind of, that song just screams to me just like chaos, disorder, revolt, you know, shaking things up.
Yeah.
You know, am I right on that for Break On Through?
I'm gonna pull myself out of the conversation about the Doors because I hate them.
Okay.
So, I'll talk about the Doors.
Yeah, no,
I love the Doors.
You guys can jump in that. I think Jim Morrison was a buffoon.
Yeah.
And I can't stand the Doors. So my comments are going to be, I want to.
That's
you
okay.
Guys,
you can yeah, criticize them.
Yeah. No. Well, yeah. Jim Morrison to me was just an idiot, and I never liked the band. I think Ray Manzarek is a very talented musician. But I can't stand their music.
Oh, wait, who did you just...
Ray Manzarek. He's the keyboard player.
Ray Manzarek, who passed away not that long ago.
No, it wasn't that long ago.
That guy, I mean, he was not just the key... He was the, you know, the keyboardist, but he... There was no bass player in the Doors.
Yeah,
there was no
cool.
bass player. So Ray Manzarek was pulling double duty. He was in charge of providing the low end of the sound.
And not only that, I mean, you know, as much as I don't like it, he did come up with one of the most iconic keyboard riffs of all time.
Light My Fire?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, that is one of the most iconic, and that's all him. And so...
Okay, and just for reference on where I am in this walk of getting better at this... I didn't recognize that song when it came on.
Seriously? You
Jeannie didn't recognize... was looking at me with her mouth wide open. She's like, she's not even saying anything, but the look on her face said, like, nothing
you've
still?
You've never
nothing?
Heard Light My Fire?
No, I've heard it, but I didn't recognize it.
You didn't
it,
recognize
but yeah,
it?
Yeah, he did, Manzarek. And I ended up reading more about Ray Manzarek than I... Is it Manzarek?
It's Manzarek, yeah.
Than I did Morrison. But Manzarek...
Well, he's a much more interesting guy than Jim Morrison was.
He was really interesting.
You know, I mean, Morrison was an idiot. He'd call me the Lizard King and all that crap. And I never found him to be any kind of a poet of any kind. He was a drug addict and a drunk who wrote lyrics that made no sense.
I mean, to be fair, you can say that about a lot of people of that era.
Well, true, really but they don't have the reputation that Jim Morrison has. There's a lot of people who were and I will say this, a beautiful looking guy, like a beautiful front man. No question about it. Had a lot of, charisma. There's no question about it. But I just think that I just think the Doors are one of the most overrated bands in the history of music. But anyway, I know Tom, you like them,
I really enjoy the Doors. I know, obviously, you can criticize Jim Morrison any day of the week, and I'm not saying that you're wrong. It's a certain style of '60s counterculture poetry stuff that can be perceived as either completely transcendent or totally, you know, moronic. But to me, I really like the Doors because of the band itself, not necessarily Jim, although I think he had the perfect voice for it. I really think he did. But you've got Ray Manzarek and I want to say, I feel terrible. Some of the other two band members, the guitarist and the drummer, who brought an amazing amount of technical ability. Like, you listen to the Doors, that's not rock and roll drumming, that's jazz. What's happening there is jazz. And like, I've got a little bit of Break On Through that I'll play right here. Just listen to the drums here. I think it's absolutely insane.
You know, the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, break on through to the other side, yeah.
Doesn't that just get your blood?
Oh, like, God, me, I like it. I like it. And I will say this about that song. Does that bass line sound familiar to anybody? There's a couple songs out there, so I'll just give you the answer. Manzarek borrowed the bass line from Ray Charles' What I Say.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, that's when I learned that they didn't have a bass player.
By the way, it's John Densmore and Robbie Krieger. Yeah. Robbie Krieger.
Both spectacular musicians that, in a lot of ways, were kind of trapped by being in the Doors. Being in the Doors was kind of a blessing and a curse. It brought them an immense amount of fame and wealth and all that kind of stuff, but they were stuck under the thumb of Jim Morrison's personality, which is where I usually am like, okay, Jim Morrison kind of sucks. Yeah, because he made these guys' life really difficult.
Yeah, I read a lot about that he did. And the producer, like, at one point, the producer was like, we've got to get some more music out of these guys because the wheels are coming off with LSD and heroin.
Oh, yeah.
But they definitely liked hanging out at Soul Kitchen. That's track two.
Yeah.
That was a restaurant owned by a lady named Olivia, a little black lady that named Olivia in Santa Monica. They loved her. They loved the restaurant. She made great soul food, and she charged $1 a plate. And so they would hang out there, and they wrote this song, Soul Kitchen, about her. That was track two. Doors' favorite spot. I didn't really feel much throughout the other tracks until track six, Light My Fire. That obviously that was a huge hit for them because I knew it, so obviously it must have been massive.
Yeah, exactly.
Track nine, Into the Night. This song could almost put you in a trance. That's the way I felt about it. It was very trance like to me. What do you think, Tom? Do you recall that song? Into the Night is kind of just one of those songs that puts you.
The Doors have a lot of tunes like that.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Is this the end on the first album?
Yeah, the end.
Yeah,
which was notorious.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And used beautifully at the beginning of Apocalypse Now, the movie Apocalypse Now.
Yeah,
got them kicked out of the Whiskey a Go-Go.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I read about that as well. That's a neat story. So the band was playing the end, that's track 11, but the band was playing it without him, from the article I read, without him, and they played a whole set. They had to play two because the other band didn't show up. And so they went to Morrison, and he was in his apartment, like, blitzed out of his mind. And so they brought him back to the stage. And when he played that one, he used some words that he didn't promise.
Well, there's a section of that song.
Yeah, there's a section.
Yeah, there's a section of that song that's, you know, you can't
talk
about
it. The Oedipus Complex section.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we won't talk about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, it was an interesting reading about that song. I probably read a couple hours about just that, the stories about that one song. But,
yeah.
Yeah, that was a fun album to go through. I had never listened to an entire album by The Doors, so that was...
Okay, so The Doors. And then, like I said, that The End became a really notorious song, and then The Doors had a second life in the early 80s, Vic. This was about 11 years after Morrison had died. They suddenly were huge again. And he made the cover of Rolling Stone. The late Jim Morrison made the cover of Rolling Stone. I'll never forget this. I was in high school. Made the cover of Rolling Stone in the fall of 1981. And it said, he's big. He's big. He's back. He's dead. That was like the headline.
Wow.
And because they were selling so many records, there was like this, you know, resurgence in record sales, like big time record sales for Doors albums. In the early 80s, and that was fueled by, you know, the popularity of the classic rock FM stations. And teenagers, you know, like my peers in high school were getting way into the Doors, like big time.
Huh.
And the record sales soared in the early 80s, so much so that he made the cover of Rolling Stone 11 years after his death.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, they had that second tier of popularity that they had. You know, they had it in the 60s and the early 70s, and it was cold for a while. And then, like, right around 1981, it became they became massive again.
Wow.
So, all right, we're going to break here for some weather, Vic. And then we've got a few more records to talk about on Vic's Picks, correct?
Yep.
All right, we'll do that after we take a break here for the weather.
Dead blood in the streets, it's up to my ankles. Deep blood in the streets, it's up to my knees.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. Coming up at 5, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Welcome back, everybody. We are live, and we are talking with Vic Vaughn about his latest musical journey, going through the top 100 albums, according to Rolling Stone magazine. And it's Vic's Picks. All right, Vic, where are we going next?
Number 41, Sex Pistols. Never mind the Bullocks. Here's the Sex Pistols, 1977.
Do I have to dump that?
No.
No.
Well, you're not in England.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Exactly.
We're fine. Yeah.
Bollocks.
The only... So he said it because we gave him... Don't celebrate it, Tom. Their only studio album. This is their only studio album. And I also learned that the Sex Pistols basically started the punk movement in England. I didn't know that. So for that, I mean, I really respect them. And I also like, from this album, it just screams anti-establishment, just kind of underground, the sound to me. But I also kind of try to put my mind thought back in that time, the late 70s. This probably would have been very, very alternative, I assume, right? I don't know. You tell me.
It was a movement. I mean, it was a total movement. And it's one of the most political records ever made. The musicianship is questionable. Like, Sid Vicious, I don't even think knew how to play the bass at all. But that wasn't the point of the album. That wasn't the point of that band.
What was the point?
Was striking out against what was happening in England.
That's what I got from it. Yeah,
and it launched the whole. I mean, it launched the whole subgenre.
Tom was telling me.
A political movement. I mean, it's an important record. One of the most important records ever recorded.
I'm so glad I listened to it.
And Glenn, you don't listen to that. Really, you don't listen to that album to go, oh, that's a really great guitar riff, or really. That's not what it's about. But it's an important record. A really important record.
Really, really starting to learn that there are a lot of albums like that.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
not exactly the stuff you would put on to clean the house to, but
yeah,
are you kidding me?
And yeah, I know. I'm sure
you'd clean up the house real fast. I can tell you that much.
Yeah, by shattering all your glasses instead of washing them.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I'm very glad that I've started this quest because I would have never listened to that album. I don't think Tom sent me a really cool email. I haven't had a chance to read through the whole thing, but Tom, this concert you were talking about, it was in England, right?
Yeah, the Sex Pistols played their first concert on June 4th, 1976. And there were just numerous people there that would go on to start bands. Mainly the ones that I always think of is the members who would become Joy Division, eventually New Order. But Joy Division was an incredibly important band in the late 70s. They started what would be later considered post-punk, which was a really interesting way to look at it. But you had members of Joy Division, and there were only like 4 dozen people there. You had Howard Devoto and Pete Shelley, who would start the Buzzcocks, which was a very important band.
Pete Shelley just passed away.
Yeah,
too.
He did.
Yeah.
And Mark E. Smith, who would start The Fall, which is a really important one. And then, of course, Stephen Patrick Morrissey, who would go on to be in The Smiths. And, of course, Tony Wilson, the subject of 24-Hour Party right. People. He managed right. New Order and also Joy Division in Manchester.
Incredible. Yeah. From watching one concert, you know.
Yeah.
History Channel wrote an article about it. Thanks for sharing that article with me. Let's move on because we only got a couple minutes.
Yeah.
So number 40, Love is the name of the band, and Forever Changes, name of the album.
Yeah, I'm really curious.
Oh,
I'm really
man.
Curious to see what you think of this.
Okay, there was so much to learn from this album. I don't think you can get it all from one listen, probably like many of the albums on this list, but I love this album. I thought it was beautiful.
Nice.
The horns, the strings, the vocals, beautiful voices. But I loved this album. I really did not think I was going to like this album, and it didn't sound anything like I thought it would.
Well, before you talk, why don't we hear a little taste of it, Vic, and then you can tell us what you thought of the album. This is Love.
And when you've given all you had, and everything still turns out bad, and all your secrets are your own, when you feel your heart beating, bum, 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 bum.
Yeah.
Didn't make a lot of money, this album. It was actually kind of a financial failure from what I read about it. Peaked at 154 on the Billboard 200. That was the best it did. It did better in UK, but it wasn't until later that they kind of noticed basically the genius of it, you know. But, you know, now it's obviously, according to Rolling Stone, considered one of the greatest albums ever recorded. But I thought it was beautiful music. I had to figure out what does forever changes mean? So I looked it up. Really kind of cool. Lee's, he's the album producer, Arthur Lee. He's also the band leader, singer-songwriter. But he heard about a friend of a friend who'd broken up with his girlfriend. And I guess she told the boyfriend, you said you'd love me forever. And he said, well, forever changes. And Lee loved that. And so he used it as the title.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a gorgeous record. I really do. I'll listen to this one quite a bit more and try to soak up all the rest. They were also one of the very first racially diverse American rock bands.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm.
Yeah, and you know, I'm really glad that you like this record. You could, I was thinking you could go either way on this one.
I really didn't know what to expect at all.
Yeah,
but I loved it. Yeah, I really did.
Tom, you a fan of Love?
I wouldn't say I'm a fan, but I definitely appreciate the, especially the production technique on this. It's very lush.
Yeah,
it's very full. You can tell that it's like what Phil Spector would do with the Wall of Sound in a certain sense. It's just really beautiful music of a particular time that wouldn't be appreciated
in its
day, but now it's like a state. Oh yeah, if you think of 60s pop, you got to think of this sort of sound.
And it is a very distinct time. It sounds like a very distinct, because you were talking about the production of it. There was a lot of records that were experimenting with that kind of sound and that kind of production. And it was a very specific time when a bunch of records kind of sounded like that. Some were better than others, and this is definitely one that's better than others.
Total flower child sort of
absolutely
sounding stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I would say for anyone that's going to dabble with Love, Forever Changes, check out track 8.
Okay.
All interesting right. Song, Live and Let Live. Ooh. Anyway, yeah, I was going to go into the Beatles, number 39. I think we'll save that one for next week.
And the Beatles, you're talking Please, Please Me.
Please, Please Me.
This will be, you know, if you're at number 39, I would imagine, Vic, that you're going to be hearing numerous Beatle albums. You're going to be...
there's at least three more.
At least.
Maybe four.
At least. Yeah.
A couple Bob Dylan ones still to go.
You're going to start to see repeats a little bit here.
It's getting really good.
I can't wait till you get into a little Robert Zimmerman.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
I haven't seen it. And I haven't seen that one.
No, that's Bob Dylan's
that's
real
Bob
name.
That's Bob Dylan's real name.
Oh!
See, you'll learn that. You'll learn that when you... That's his real name. That's Bob Dylan's real name. So, all right, Vic, as always, fun and fascinating, and I'm glad you're enjoying it, and so there you go. All right, we'll do it again. Vic's Picks next week as Vic continues his musical journey.